meeting to order. It's 4 minutes after three. Mr. Kemplin arriving at leaves. Mr. Kemplin, Mr. Bryce present, Representative Green, Representative and Co-Chair Dyson, and Co-Chair Coghill. We have quorum. And so today, for the calendar, we have HB 18 also for notice is Mr. Whitaker present. We have HB 18, payment for remedial classes at the University of Alaska, presented by Mr. Dyson. And then we'll be considering State Board of Education, some of the governor's appointments. And so and we'll have some people testifying as we come up on these. And we will be in teleconference a little later. So, and we'll be announcing that as we go. I have signed up on this one. We have Carl Rose and John Sear. Without any further ado, we'll go ahead and ask Mr. Dyson to go ahead and present his HB 118 to us. Mr. Dyson, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm delighted that you extended the privilege of hearing this bill to me, although not surprised. As I have interacted with folks on the education issues around the state, I realize that an inordinate percentage of kids entering our post-secondary education need some help. And the university, I don't have exact figures, maybe somebody will have them for us, but a significant percentage of students need some remedial help when they get to school. And I think within the last few years, we've seen that the whole idea of social promotion in school and that has kind of passed as a fad. I don't know what its half-life was, but it seemed like it had a 10 or 15 years of being an acceptable way to do it. So we're at the end of that. What we have here is a bill that, in essence, gives a financial warranty for a kid that was given a diploma and goes to the university system within 2 years and needs remedial work. And it would let the remedial work be reimbursed from the district that gave a diploma. We did not do a sectional analysis, but you'll notice that there's the one new section, and then at the very end, the last paragraph, it talks about how the cost would be determined. So I didn't do a sectional analysis. I also noticed an article that clipped out of the newspaper here that talks about things like this that are going on in Virginia, South Carolina, Colorado, Georgia, and that are intriguing. And interestingly enough, I'm sure many of you, as I had a continual parade of Carl Rose's friends through my office here, the school boards and superintendents and so on, and everybody that was there that came to see me, I asked them what they thought about it. And some of them were a little startled, but no one really thought that it was a bad idea. I'm hoping that it only sends a very symbolic message and that isn't taken advantage of very often. School districts, I think, across the state with the Quality in Schools Initiative, mandatory exit testing, and so on, are moving towards diplomas really meaning something. Indeed, the university people that I've talked to think this is a marvelous idea. And secondarily, I have a companion bill, 119, that allows adults to attend high school and be a part of the funding formula. And I'm hoping that the net result of both of these is that most of the remedial education happens in the local high schools, thus unloading the university and providing the education at very locally and at much less expense. I'm open to questions.
All right. Is there any questions from the committee? Yes, Mr. Kemplin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Esteemed colleague of mine. What's your effective date? What was your notion here in terms of an effective date for this piece of legislation?
Yeah, thank you, Representative Kemplin, through the chair. And in fact, we didn't address that, and maybe should. I certainly did not anticipate that this would look backwards. It would be from this date forward, or maybe a year from now forward, so that schools operating on a different philosophy wouldn't be caught, you know, by this. Point well taken.
Just pursuing that a little bit, we have already passed legislation requiring the exit exam, and that is to be in effect in the year 2002. And anybody who does not meet that, does not pass that exit exam, they do not get a diploma. All they get is a certificate of attendance, from my understanding. So would you see this piece of legislation being effective at the same time that our exit exam goes into effect?
Thank you, Mr. Kemplin. Just to make sure that we have this on recording, we need to make sure that the address between each conversation, I need to recognize you at a time, Mr. Kemplin. Thank you for that question. Mr. Dyson, would you care to answer that?
Yeah, Representative Dyson, I'd be delighted, Mr. Chair. Your question is a good one, and I said in my opening remarks that my sense is that good exit testing will probably make this obsolete. But both of us are basing that on the assumption that passing the exit test means that you don't need any remedial work when you go to college. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a good assumption, but that's not a guarantee that the exit test makes that that. Well, it's not a guarantee that passing an exit test means that you don't need remedial work. I think it should.
Mm-hmm. Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If graduates with the same limited capacity that I have bone up for a test to pass the exit exam, and then I go work on cars for 2 years, I may have the skills to get past the test. I may have the skills to communicate, but I'm really perhaps not current. Would it be the school's fault that I either didn't do well enough in the college portion or didn't keep myself current on prepositional phrases that school then should pay the college? It seems to me that's an undue burden.
Through the chair, Representative Dyson, perhaps my assumption is that good students like you that were planning on starting in the fall would start doing a little boning up and would get ahead of it. But the converse is also true. One of the things we worried about when we sat here and worked on this stuff the last couple of years is that schools would start teaching to the test, not to educated person competency. Mm-hmm. You know, and so that the whole of the educational experience in some schools would absolutely be oriented not on getting a good education, but on passing the test. And that's, I think it's a danger that we always face. What we're after here is that the child or the young person that comes to the university be prepared to start university work and not have to repeat parts of high school, what he should have gotten in high school.
Follow up
on that, right. Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Representative Green. My concern is that it might not be the program that's at fault, though. It might be, for example, where I went to high school, I know there were people who graduated that probably still spoke in double negatives. And so it wasn't necessarily the program that was at fault, and that's who you'd be punishing, because you'd say, okay, high school, Joe showed up and, you know, he really has trouble. But it's my personal problem and not the program's problem.
If I may, Representative Dyson, if I may continue, Mr. Chairman, you hit the problem. if indeed the student didn't apply himself, then in our view, the school shouldn't have given him a diploma.
Well, I'm
all right. Well, let me just go on to the next question. And
well, it's still the same question, though, if I might, Mr. Chairman.
All right.
It's
one
not,
more stab at it, Representative
okay.
Green.
Okay. He did apply himself enough to get through the hurdle, but he still, and the program is certainly, I mean, most everybody else can go through there, and they won't even see the hurdle. They'll just go whistling by it. But student A, me, or whoever, is still, by his own problem, not the school's problem, not proficient. Just barely enough to get through.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Dyson, I anticipate that some schools will issue diplomas with disclaimers.
Okay.
Okay. And I would assume that it would be a positive defense of the school to trot out the tests and the grades and so on and say, look it, this kid was really good when we got to turn him loose. You know, he was doing very well, and so we did our part, and we're not responsible for what happened after that.
Thank you.
Representative Bryce.
A couple of things. First of all, on that point, I think we're making an assumption that freshman math is a logical extension of high school 12th grade math, when there might be an honest gap between the two in terms of the complexity and the difficulty. And I think that might be, I think that's kind of what we're talking about, is that you've passed your test, but the complexity of the courses that you're going to be required to take at the 100 level might be a little bit more difficult. Secondly, with the effective date, it's 90 days after signature. So that's probably pretty clear enough.
Sure.
But the question I have of the sponsor is, you go to the University of Alaska, and you have a choice when you're making your class selection of remedial classes. Now, the university might require you to take the remedial classes, in which case I can see the merit in the bill. When I took the remedial classes, I did it simply out of the desire for knowledge to get boned up before I go on. And so it was completely voluntary. Would you foresee that those people who take the voluntary classes, not the people who are being required to, but the people who are doing it voluntarily, that those classes be paid for by the school district as well? Or would you be willing to make a differentiation between the two?
Thank you. Through the chair, Representative Dyson. Good question, Representative Bryce. I would not want the school district to be responsible financially for any voluntary courses
okay.
that the student took
okay.
At all. And I want that to be a clear
okay.
part of the record.
Representative Kemplin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Dyson, in the backup material that you provided, I looked through it, and I saw where the examples in other states, they have language that required this approach to apply for students that have a minimum GPA. For example, Virginia's, quoting here from your backup material, Virginia's proposed warranties are eligible only to advanced studies students who score a 2.5 GPA or higher, halfway between a B and a C. So I noticed that in your language, it doesn't put those sideboards on it. And is there a reason why?
Yep, through the chair, Representative Dyson. Yeah, we thought about that. And I thought about a companion question. What about a student that does not choose, a student in a school and parents does not choose a college prep course and chooses, and there's lots of alternatives, and chooses a vocational prep, so on. I anticipate, you know, then I think that that the district might very well say, we weren't intending, you know, to prepare this student, and that wasn't the choice that student made. And I would anticipate that school districts would indeed put that on the diploma. And what, as a kind of a positive defense disclaimer for, you know, what they were preparing that student for.
So
and that's the language we have, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, we have a amendment language for here prepared to meet that GPA thing, if you're interested.
So yeah, I just so it seems now that the way it's written is that you know, everyone who graduates from school with a diploma should be qualified for college. That's what your that's the assumption that you're making, that everybody who graduates from high school should be prepared to and enter college-level courses.
If I may reply, Mr. Chairman, not quite, Representative Dyson, not quite. Everyone who goes to college and applies should have been prepared. But that assumes that they took the college, you know, the courses that were available. That's why I'm anticipating that schools will indeed, if they have parallel course, it would so note on a diploma and therefore not be subject to the warranty provisions.
Mm-hmm. Representative Kemplin, continue.
Well, just like with a warranty that you get from a product, there are certain guidelines for those warranties. You know, you can't misuse the product. Mm-hmm. And if you do go outside the defined limits of that product, then the warranty is void. And it would seem to me that if a school is going to provide a warranty, then you know, it should be able to you know, put some you know, caveats on that warranty. And that, for example, you know, a student notifying the their intent that they were going to actually go to college, so that the school district is aware that this individual is going to require a higher level of warranty than someone who than any other student.
If I may respond, Mr. Chairman, Representative Dyson, and I expect the diploma that gets issued to state what it's good for. This student is prepared for post-secondary education. And if not, then it would state so. And I believe that's a positive defense against being the back charges. Excellent point.
See, thank you very much, Mr. Dyson.
Okay. So any other questions? Yes, sir, Mr. Kemplin.
Mr. Chairman, yes. I believe one of our folks that needs to is calling in on the net has time constraints, and I would.
He wanted to testify on 118.
Negative. It's one of the ones that wants to testify, I believe, on the appointments.
Okay.
And I would suggest when we get there available. Who is that, Les?
Susan Statham.
Okay. Would you let us know?
Okay. Just to let you know, Representative Dyson, that we do have three people here to testify. One by way of teleconference, it's Wendy Redmond from. Oh, she's here. I'm sorry. I thought it was a teleconference. A thousand pardons. See, that's what I'll get used to everybody around here. So that means we have three. So well, let's go ahead and receive that testimony right now, starting with Carl Rose, and then we'll go to John Searin and Wendy. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Carl Rose, Executive Director of the Association of Alaska School Boards. And thank you for the opportunity to testify on House Bill 118. At first glance, when I look at the bill, I think most of the intent of this bill has been addressed somewhat through a host of legislation that's already been passed and has culminated in a qualifying exam. And that's why I want to testify today, because I think that the bill in its intent is trying to ensure the quality of education, and I think that that is the intent behind the entire quality initiative and also the qualifying exam. So I see a parallel here, and I don't know what the committee's intent is going to be, but I would say, and I have visited with Representative Dyson about this issue, and I understand his intent. We were talking earlier, and most people have already covered my testimony, so I'll try to be brief. What we have embarked on is a process of performance standards. We're looking at performance standards for our professionals, for our students, for our communities in terms of involvement, as well as accreditation of the system. This is going to engage us in curriculum development, professional development, and assessments to ensure that we are, in fact, progressing and meeting the bar that we set. The concern that I would have is that after an investment like this that culminates in the year 2002 with the qualifying exam that our freshmen this year have been taking, that we are going to have additional constraints upon that. Now, I want to back up to talk about the value of a diploma. Because of the legal constraints of denying a diploma, we have had to mandate in law all the standards that are set forth. And so as a result of that, the diploma is going to have some really added value. I would suggest that if someone who receives a diploma after the year 2002 has to take remedial education at our university system, the system is in real need of reform. But I think that's why we're here. So I look at the bill and I understand the intent. I see the parallel that's been created, and I think, and I have a lot of hope in this and belief, that with the culmination of a qualifying exam, that our students that do qualify for a diploma will successfully be prepared to go to the system. Now the question has to be, what do we do with all the rest that haven't identified their intent to go to college? I think we're going to be looking at a system that will be turning out an awful lot of certificates of attendance. That's not tolerable either, but the system has to be able to adjust for that, I believe. But I think everyone here can agree that we're not turning out kids on a college track. We're trying to get them ready to pursue a quality life. And in doing so, I don't want to downplay a certificate of attendance, but what we're talking about here is some rigor that is going to be expected through the performance standards that will culminate in a diploma that I believe will stand up to the intent of this bill. But I guess the question really is another question, and it might lead to maybe we wander off into House Bill 119. What do we do with remedial education and adult education for everyone else who only achieved a certificate of attendance? What do we do with them? So I applaud the bills coming forward. I think that these are issues that need to be debated, because we've already embarked on a path, and we need to talk about how we shape this thing. So the diploma will speak for itself, I believe. What do we do with all the rest who haven't identified early on that they intend to go to college? And myself, as an example, had not planned to go to college until after 4 years in the service, and did take remediation, as I think most people in this room may have done. But pertaining to this bill, I think the quality initiatives and the qualifying exam will stand up to the test of the university system. The question has to be, what do we do with all the rest? I'll try to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you very much. Is there any questions? All right. Thank you very much, Carl. John, you want to come up? John Sear. Thank you.
Thank you, Co-Chair Coghill. For the record, my name is John Sear. I'm the president of NEA Alaska. Where to start? I do appreciate the fact that this bill has come forward, just because I think the discussion is important. Quite frankly, this is the first that I have heard that we believe that the exit exam was built to say everybody who passes the exit exam qualifies or is qualified to go on to the university. I did not believe when we discussed that in the previous bill that that was really what it was about. It was about saying that these kids who passed the exam have met a level of achievement that we believe is sufficient to award them a high school diploma. There's a big difference between that and warranting kids for university work. If what we're saying is that high schools across Alaska have got to provide a warranty for the university, then I think that's a markedly different course of study than it is to say what we're doing is preparing children to go out into the world of work, some of them to the university, some of them into jobs, and some into the service, and some to be legislators, and some to be teachers. I mean, there's a wide variance there that I don't think is taken into account. The idea of a college warranty to me is intriguing, because it brings in the idea of a differentiated diploma that says you got this kind of diploma, boom, you know, you off you go, and you can head for Harvard or UAA, which brings, I guess, the next level is what is the criteria that the university uses for entry? Now, MIT doesn't do remedial math courses. But they, well, they may, I'm not sure. They may, but they don't accept everyone either. I'm not suggesting that the university should change its acceptance policy. I think that state-funded universities have an obligation to the state, you know, to let kids through the door.
I do have a teleconference coming up, so bring it right down to appointment, because I do want to get Wendy Redmond up before
I appreciate that. My third point is I'm surprised that this bill only speaks about public schools being held liable. We have people from other institutions, other schools that go to our universities. And if we're going to hold one segment liable, I think we should talk about the whole spectrum of folks who send, quote, the raw material, if we will, off to the university. And we ought to take a look at how the whole system works, how those systems fit together. So look forward to working with the sponsor and with the committee. As the bill sits now, we, NEA Alaska, is not in favor of it. We are opposed, but sure interested in the possibilities that this brings forward.
Appreciate your time. Sorry, I'm cutting short a little bit here. Is there any questions real quickly? We do need to go move along.
I would suggest that John will probably stay, and we can come back to him.
Please do.
If you wish to do that,
we'll
bring this into discussion.
Yeah.
I appreciate that.
Thank you.
And that brings us to Wendy. Would you please come on up here, Wendy Redmond? And for those of you on teleconference, we're going to go ahead and bring this discussion to a close so we can pick up our teleconference meeting, and then we'll pick this up at the end if that's okay with the committee. And I appreciate your time. Wendy, I'm sorry. You can obviously see my newness in this.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Wendy Redmond, Vice President for the University of Alaska Statewide System. It's the first time I can remember in 27 years of working in Juneau that I've ever come before a bill that offered to give the university money and had to speak against it. It's a little disconcerting for me because I understand the intent, and we certainly need money at the university for remedial education. It is, unfortunately, a growing part of what we do. As it is in schools and colleges all over the country. However, we absolutely do not support taking the money from the schools to give it to the university. What we'd be hopeful for is full funding of our budget request, which in fact does include money for remedial education. So hopefully that really, I believe, is the appropriate way to deal with the problem. At this point, and we've been working closely with the school districts on the Alaska Quality Education Initiatives. We think that is the appropriate way that the schools are addressing the whole issue of standards. Faculty at the university have been involved in working with teachers on the development of appropriate standards for graduation and within each discipline area so that the requirements for college-level work are getting built into those standards as we move along. I think Mr. Sayers brought up the issue. I think the University of Alaska has a complicated mission because we do have the community college mission as well. And so we are an open admission university. It is the community college's role to take people in who don't have the proper preparation and be able to provide that. We do need a funding mechanism to do that, and so I would hope, Representative Dyson, that you will also, as well as this legislation, that you'll also be supportive in our budget request as well as the school's budget request to try to get the funding we need to make this a reality. In the interest of time, I'll stop there. And
thank you, Wendy. I appreciate that. And is there a question for Wendy before we run?
We do, but you said you were in a short fuse. Can we come back to this after
you
take
the testimony?
Absolutely.
Thanks, Wendy. Thank you. With that, I'm going to go ahead and close the testimony on that particular, and then with the understanding that we're going to pick it up at the end of the period where we deal with the confirmation hearings of the governor's appointees. And I understand that at this point we have from Fairbanks, is that true, Susan Statham online with us, and we also have Steve Beardsley, teaching practices in Anchorage. And is that true? Can you hear us okay?
Yes, I can hear you. Susan,
all right, Susan, I understand that you have some time constraints, so I'd like to go ahead and have you give us a little introduction of yourself and maybe open yourself to a couple of questions, and then we can go on to Steve from there. Is that all right with you?
Wonderful. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate that. I left some students at Lathrop High School watching a video for extra credit. They're watching War and Peace. So I expect it to still be going on when I get there. Since you're familiar with the length of that, I'm sure. I am Susan Sartham. I teach at Lathrop High School right now, mostly 10th graders and 12th graders, English and social studies, AP European History and Shakespeare. And sort of other classes. I have taught there since 1972. I believe that you have my resume, so I won't go through all that. I have served on the State Board of Education for the last 4 years, I think, 4.5 years. It has been a wonderful experience. I think I've been involved in education for about over 30 years here in Alaska, and actively involved for about 25 on the state level. And I think this is the most hopeful time I've seen. There's a real conjunction, if you will, of the stars and of leadership from the legislature and the governor and the commissioner, Department of Ed, and I think the state board is playing a partnership role there, and I'm really proud to be part of that. I did serve on the Board of Regents in the late 80s and early 90s, and I feel that the connection between the university and K-12 is really important. That's something I've been able to, I think, bring to the board, along with being a practicing classroom teacher. But this is a very hopeful time, and I'm hopeful to be able to continue to be part of it. So I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions from the committee? Representative Dyson would like to ask a question, Susan.
Sure.
Susan, thank you for being available. And certainly looks like you've been paying your dues in terms of educating our children, and I appreciate that, and I appreciate your willingness to serve. Susan, John Sear and I have had some interesting conversations over the years about the number of positions the National NEA has taken, some of which are very contrary to Alaska's needs. Have there any of the national positions that NEA has taken that you take exception to?
John's in the room, isn't he?
What'd you say?
John's in the room.
Yes, yes, John is with us.
Yeah, thank you. I suspect that most Alaskans are pretty independent thinkers, and glad to hear you are. The aside from what I think are real constraints in the Alaska Constitution in terms of any public funds going to private institutions, aside from that constitutional issue in the state constitution, would you be against any kind of tax credits
on a local level for that went to private institutions or allowed parents to get a tax credit who were not in the public system and their children were going to private schools?
The short answer to that is yes. The State Board of Education, and I'm sure you know, has taken a very strong position in support of public schools and public school choice, but against spending public money on private education. Can I elaborate briefly, or is that enough?
Sure. Go ahead if you wish, Susan.
Okay, thanks. I myself attended private school in 7th and 8th grade. My parents sent me to a Catholic school, which they felt was an important part of my education, and I appreciated that. I think the choice of private school is an important one, but I think that the public schools are, and I don't want to be hyperbolic about this, but I really believe they are the foundation of our country and of our democracy. And, I mean, Thomas Jefferson said, those who wish to be ignorant and free want that which never was and never will be. And I think the problem with allowing, spending our public monies on private schools is it's going to take money away from the public schools. And our total focus as a society, it seems to me, needs to be to improve public schools. Do I think public schools can improve? Absolutely. Do I think Alaska's public schools are very good compared to many places outside? Yes, I do. They have been and they're continuing to be. But can they get better? Definitely. But that's what we need to focus our energies on, especially in a time of resources being limited. It's incredibly important for our kids to have the experience of mixing and being part of a microcosm that reflects the entire community and to be part of that public education. It's a common experience that makes our democracy work. So I hope it didn't go on too long.
If I may follow up.
Sure.
Yeah, I wasn't speaking of vouchers or public money. I was only talking about tax credits in that context.
Tax credits. Tax credits in Alaska, do we pay taxes?
No. I don't know how it goes there in Fairbanks, but we who live in the municipality of Anchorage pay property taxes to support about half of the school budget.
I see. You're talking, I missed your point, local tax money, like tax credits. Well, I guess I would still have a concern because you're taking that money, kind of as Wendy Redman was speaking before. We have a fixed pot of money for education, apparently. Now, if we're willing to change that, and if we feel that we can spend the money we really need for our education, then I might look at that differently. But my first reaction is to say we should be supporting the public schools.
If I may follow up then, tell me if this is unfair. I think what I heard you saying is you're not against a tax credit per se. You're only against any scheme that takes money away from public education where it's desperately or certainly significantly needed.
Boy, I hadn't actually thought about this tax credit idea, so I think that I'd have to qualify it by saying that I need to look at it and think about it some more, but you're definitely right about the part where I think we need to put our money into our renewable resource, which is kids and the public schools.
And if I may follow up another question.
Yes, sir, Mr. Dyson.
Your last answer before that one, where you're talking about the need to have kids in a cultural setting or a educational setting that's very like the community they live in, seems to indicate that you maybe think that parents shouldn't be empowered to make that decision about the culture that their children grow up in. And I guess I'd like to give you an opportunity to speak about what role you think parents should have, and particularly, the NEA has taken a strong position, I think even this last platform, that children need to have great confidentiality, and the indication to me was at least that they need to do things in school and so on that the parents don't know about. Where are you at in all that, in the parents' involvement and control of their kids?
Okay, I'm not too sure about the last part. I think parents are the most important and first teachers of kids. I think that the brain research that we're knowing about, the explosion of information we're getting about the first 5 years of life, make it really clear that parents absolutely have the most significant influence on children for good or for ill. And I support parenting and helping parents be the best parents they can be. I absolutely support parental choice within the public schools. That's my only caveat. So I think a parent, sure, they get to choose. My parents chose to send me to a boarding school, actually, a Catholic boarding school for 2 years. And I totally think they had the right to make that choice. My problem comes down with what kind of options do we give somebody to use public money for that choice? And I think that's why I support expanding public choice within the public schools. Anchorage has done a great job of that over the years, even before we had charter schools, because they had a lot of different options. Obviously, the smaller the community, the more difficult it is to have a lot of options. But I think the charter school movement, charter schools, hold out great promise. And we've got some good examples here in Fairbanks, and I know they have in Anchorage as well. So I support that kind of choice. I'm not at all clear about the NEA position on confidentiality, but I would like to say, Representative Dyson, that I really, I think, again, that Mr. Sear can support me in this. I do not in any way consider myself representing NEA on the State Board of Education. I feel that I represent, you know, all of them, and as a steward, I certainly bring my teaching experience and to some extent my NEA experience, but their positions are not at all controlling of me.
I can't tell you how delighted I am to hear that. I think that, at least in the information I have, the resolution NEA said, the National Education Association believes that every child should have direct and confidential access to comprehensive health, social, psychological programs and services. That seemed to indicate to me that confidentiality means the parents are out of the loop. So regardless of where NEA is at, where are you at in wanting the parents to be absolutely in the loop and know what's going on with their students and have the go, no-go choice about what their students participate in?
You know, that really, I mean, I could give you a simple answer, but like most simple answers, it would be wrong. The problem I have with that is it depends, I think, on the age of the child. I work with high school students and I work with a lot of seniors. There are situations, sadly, and I think we all know that, where there are situations where kids are in a family situation that's dangerous, it's harmful, and they need to be able to talk to somebody about that, and sometimes confidentially. And I think all efforts should be made to involve parents in all of these things. I think the younger the child, the more important that is. By the time you're getting to somebody in 16, 17, 18 that I deal with, I think there are circumstances within which that child does need confidentiality. But any black and white rule always, you know, has difficulty and problems. So I think it's a philosophical effort to try to include parents as much as possible, obviously, but sometimes there are things kids need to talk about.
Yeah, thank you. And I found that a very satisfactory answer, and I hope you didn't take my questions as being antagonistic, and thanks for your willingness to serve.
Susan, I do have Representative Green would like to ask a question. So, Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Susan, of the various appointees that we're going to be talking about, you seem to have the longevity. Where do you feel that our school's graduates rank now as compared to where they ranked in 95?
1995?
Uh-huh. Are we doing better, or about the same, or poorer?
Well, I think it would depend on what major, representative. You mean like on something like standardized tests, like SAT?
Yes.
I believe, I don't have the data in front of me, I believe that our kids are continuing to improve on that. Standardized tests are not a very good measure of many things. For one thing, SAT doesn't measure curriculum. That's why I think our qualifying exam, you know, it's really, again, a partnership with the legislature and the state board and the governor and all. I think it's going to be very exciting for us in terms of actually having a measure on how we're doing it. We'll be able to answer a question like that a lot better when we have benchmarks and can actually see how our kids are doing. But just my overall sense of it, and I do teach a lot of seniors. I send kids off to college and watch them go both in Alaska and outside of Alaska. I think we're doing better. I don't know about 95 per se, but I certainly know that sometimes parents, I'll just digress for a moment, just those of you who know me know that it's sort of a dangerous thing here, give me an open mic, but sometimes people whose only experience with schools is when they were themselves were in school, say 15, 20, 25 years ago, have this sort of golden glow about how hard they worked and how tough it was and uphill both ways in the snow, that kind of thing. And I have to tell you, having been in high school now for 30-some years, these kids right now today, certainly the schools I know best or Fairbanks schools, are working harder and learning more than we did 25, 30 years ago. And I think they're doing well. And our school, I mean, can we improve? Yes. Now that we've got the standards and the K-12 standards, and we're all going to be singing off the same sheet of music, I'm just enormously optimistic about the power of that. In fact, let me just tell you, we had a former superintendent talk to us at the board meeting last week, who said, I want to tell you, I've been very negative about many many things, and I'm quick to be negative, but I have to tell you, this is the most optimistic time I see in public education in Alaska, and I'm really almost hopeful. So we felt great.
Thank you. One other, do you need a follow-up?
Follow-up.
Okay, there's going to be a follow-up on that. Susan from Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Joe Green again. Susan, the reason I asked the 95 to 99, that's the period of time that you've been on the board, and I was wondering what you have done. I hear what's going to happen. This is going to be good, but can you tell us briefly what you've done that makes us want to say, yeah, you're our person?
Personally? I don't think any individual really, a board member, I wouldn't say, probably could say that, but I think as a group, I think that I hope that I brought an ability, I would say my experience in the classroom, but I think an ability to help focus on the issues and keeps going in a direction towards these standards. I myself have worked on the standards in Alaska since 1990, long before I was on the state board. I've been involved in various parts of that, and this board we have and this commissioner and the department staff really are focused on this issue. There have been huge changes, and I know we haven't realized perhaps the benefits yet because we have to lay the groundwork, but it's like planting trees, right, for the next generation. But we have moved since 1990, since Governor Hickel and Commissioner Covey convened a group they called the Blue Ribbon Task Force on Education, which I served on, of 20 people in 1990, and then we went to Alaska 2000, and it's been a steady progress. I think I heard Carl Rose earlier this afternoon, and he was part of that group. It was a bipartisan or multi-partisan group of people in Alaska who've been moving education forward. And since 95, since I had the fortune to be appointed to the board, I think we've been able to help move that agenda, and our commissioner certainly is focused on it, and we really, I think we're going to see some great fruits. I'm sorry I can't tell you anything I've done personally, except possibly add a moment of levity every once in a while.
Thank you, Susan. Also, Tom Bryce would like to ask a question, Susan.
Well, actually, Representative Green hit on it, but one quick statement is the remarkable thing about her students is they don't require remedial classes once they go to the university.
Thank you for that comment. Representative Whitaker also has a question.
I don't have a question either. I, too, have a comment. Mrs. Statham talked two people very close to me, my stepdaughter, Christy Sturgis, and a very good friend of our family, Colin Cahill, both of whom have master's degrees and are doing very, very well in life. And they still talk very, very highly with regard to Mrs. Statham. So having said that, I have no problem at all supporting her continued involvement.
Thank you very much. Please say hi to them for me.
I will do so. Thank you.
All right. We have several other people on teleconference, and thank you, Susan, for joining us. And is there any other questions? All right.
Thank you very much, all of you. I appreciate what you're doing for us, and I'm going to go back and see if Napoleon's going to win the war.
He loses.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Also, we have with us Paulowski, I'm sorry, in Anchorage. Steve Beardsley is also there with Vicki McCubbin. And then we have Roy Nagiak in Barrow with us. Is Roy on the line with us?
Yes, I am. Good afternoon.
Roy, I'm going to ask Steve Beardsley to speak first, and then you're next in line. Is that okay with you?
That's okay with me.
All right. Steve Beardsley, can you hear us?
Yes, go ahead.
Steve, welcome to the HES Committee, and as an appointee, we'd just like you to introduce yourself to us, please, and any particular points of information you'd like to bring in, we'd surely appreciate.
I've been a teacher for 28 years, 26 of it in Anchorage itself, experienced in primary grades, and I just left my classroom, not with War and Peace at the third grade level, but with decimals, which seem like War and Peace. Proud to be working with this professional teaching practices. A cohort of mine served on it for 6 years with the view that Alaska is a good view of the state of education. And according to Susan, and I agree with her, this is a good time to be in Alaska. We do have benchmarks. It's time to move on and continue with it.
All right. Is there any questions from the committee? Yes, sir. Representative Bryce, Steve, has a question.
Yes, I assume, Mr. Beardsley, that you're taking the teacher seat on the PTPC then?
That is correct.
Okay. Who's sitting there now?
I don't have that list in front of me.
Okay.
I was prepared to do that.
That's fine.
I believe Peggy Jones has been replaced on the board by one of us, I believe. And Marcia Van Abel. Those are the two retirees from the board. Peggy Jones retiring after 6 years, I believe.
Following up.
Yes, follow up from Mr. Bryce.
Yes, Mr. Beardsley, what kind of background and involvement do you have in the in your school district currently dealing with ethics issues, that kind of stuff?
I serve as a building representative within the building level, not too much on the full district level at this point.
Thank you.
Previously, I've served on some district ethic type of thing, but not on a certified type board.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
Mr. Beardsley, Representative Green also has a question.
Yes, Steve, you're an Anchorage resident?
Yes, and also with the Ocean View Community Homeowners, which you attend quite often.
I was just going to ask you if your place of residence is in the kind of the mecca of Anchorage.
Well, I don't know if it's the mecca, but we're certainly real close to the bluff, so if it's the mecca, we're real close to jump off.
Okay. Hi, Steve.
Representative Dyson also has a question. Steve?
Yeah, thank you. Steve, I think I remember you from the Tuesday night races.
Yeah, still doing that, but the crazy Bill Carroll is also now a teacher. It's still enjoyable to do those Tuesday night runs, plus maybe a 50-miler in my future.
Wow. Well, you're doing better than me. I suspect you heard my questions to Susan. Have you found issues that the National NEA has taken that you take a different view on?
Well, I'm not sure if that's, at this point, I'm not ready to say of which views that I have supported and have not. I don't know if this is in the scope of professional teaching ethics. I'm not real sure if it fits within that scope. I sit down and as a teacher to view from superintendencies down to the teachers to see if it's ethically and what staff has brought before the board.
All right. Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you, Mr. Beardsley. We're going to go ahead and go on to Roy Nagiak up in Barrow and give him a chance to introduce himself to us. And Roy, if you're online, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself, the view you have towards this particular appointment.
It's an honor to be in front of the school. I've been with the State Board of Education since 1997, and now I'm waiting for my reappointment. But prior to that, I've been involved in education for, like with our North Slope Borough, back in the early days when the North Slope Borough first started, from 1973 to 1976, and then since I got married and I had children, I went back into the politics of my local school board from 1988 to now, mm-hmm. and I'm still a local school board member. I have been fortunate to be involved with the Alaska Association of School Boards from 1988 to 1998, last year. And I was fortunate to work with a real good group of school board members from all over the state, and from that I had a statewide perspective. In regards to private schools, I think I went to a private school when I went to a brewer up in Indiana Pierce, boarding school in Salem, Oregon, for my high school years, and that was quite a shock, but I lived through it and went back home and became a productive citizen of the state. I've been involved in a lot of other boards here locally. I'm been an electric co-op board member. I'm with the Barrowfield Captains Association, and I'm with the Village Corporation here locally. And I've been involved in politics in the local area for the last 15 to 20 years. Are there any questions?
Is there any questions from the committee for Roy? Roy, this is Representative Coghill. On the board, since you've served there and you see the change in education generally, what do you see that you can bring to the board for education in Alaska, just generally speaking? I'd like to have you take a stab at that. I know it's very general, but if you could just kind of let me know where your thinking's at, I'd appreciate it.
I've seen a lot of changes in the educational system, and the times now with Juno in regards to what's happening, the new laws that are coming up that we need to comply with. I concur with a lot of those laws, and in some cases I don't. In regards to our local school district, we've been fortunate that we had a tax base from the Puna Bayfields, and the whole state's been kind of fortunate in that respect, and allow us to do what we needed to do, but our funds are limited too now that the town turned in the oil companies. But what we've done here locally is the utilization of a lot of new technology, connection to the villages. In some cases, our courses being taught by one teacher here in Barrow and being telecast out into the other villages from one point where one teacher could teach like seven villages. And I think from a statewide perspective, we're seeing that with the new technology made available, like with the Delta Cyberspace, where a lot of parents now and a lot of the smaller villages are starting to connect with that type of technology, and I'm familiar with that. And I was fortunate that the last reorganization of the State Board of Education, I was elected as chairman. It's great to work with such a diverse group. When they take an issue that we work on it from a lot of different angles and take it from there and look at the regulations that need to be made with the new laws that come from our legislation, try to make it work. And from a rural perspective, I could bring the rural perspective and the statewide perspective after my association with the Alaska Association of School Board for so many years.
Thanks, Roy. I appreciate that. I appreciate you answering that. Look forward to crossing paths with you. Is there any other questions? We have Representative Green also would like to bring something up, Roy.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Roy, are you familiar with the, I'm not sure what the term would be, but tele-teaching, I mean television teaching?
Yes, I am. In fact, our school district is in the forefront of but we've got one teacher, like I stated earlier, teaching, and he could interact and have a student in front of a TV, and he could see the problems that they're having, and the student in the village could show him, the teacher in Barrow, the piece of paper that he's working on, and the teacher from Barrow could look at the piece of paper and see where he could tell him what's wrong with the problem that he's working on.
What do you think of that method?
It's working. We've had that for the last 6 to 8 years. And that's where the purity, of course, is. We kind of consider Barrow a big city kind of atmosphere and our smaller villages. When you don't have enough students to qualify for, like, a high school teacher, and we've got a whole bunch of them here in Barrow, and using the TV, interactive TV, that's what they call it, interactive TV. The period of courses in our villages increase. And I wish you that as a plus.
Good. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Roy. Thank you very much for taking the time to join us. I appreciate it. In fact, all of those on teleconference, I appreciate you taking the time to join us. In Anchorage, we have Paula Pawlowski. Are you there, Paula?
Yes, I am.
Thank you for joining us. And then Vicki McCubbin, I'll have you testify directly afterward, if that's okay. And Paula, welcome to our teleconference. And I would appreciate if you just go ahead and take a moment to introduce yourself. You've heard some of the questions. You might anticipate them, but appreciate you joining us and presenting yourself to us. Thank you.
Thank you for the opportunity. As you probably know, I'm still the new kid on the block for the board, last appointed, and joined the group early last summer. I am a Alaskan-born. My family goes back to the turn of the century in Fairbanks, but my mother married a military person on Elmendorf when I was 5, so I crisscrossed the country. And then somehow I married a military person, and so our family has done the same. We spent approximately 10 years on Cape Cod, which is a delightful place to live, and now clicking off 12 years in Alaska as a family. So my youngest child is 18, graduating from West High this year in Anchorage, and my oldest is 26. We've been involved as a family in American Field Service for about 15 years, and we've hosted 3 exchange students within our home. And I'm currently serving the last year of my term as the Alaska State PTA president. So that might give you a jump off.
All right. Thank you. Thank you very much. Is there any questions or anything? Fred Dyson has a question for you, Paula.
Paula, thank you. I noticed that on your resume that you are a presenter on parent involvement and site-based management. Did I read that right?
Yes.
What does site-based management mean to you?
Well, one of the things we do during our workshop on site-based management is talk about the different methods that it can take. I was involved with Brown University's site-based management team with Theodore Sizer's group on the East Coast, and that was a little more intensive, perhaps, than some site councils in Alaska. We were in on, I guess, every single bit of training with teachers, parents, and community members and students. We had 30-30-30, which was quite a large group to handle, and did from interviewing principals and assistant principals to interviewing teachers and participating in setting the standards for the high school. Site councils in Alaska, I've given workshops in both Seward and in Juneau, where site councils, as you know, are quite common. It's not so the case across the state, so it's really in individual pockets. And the ability of what goes on with that site council also varies from district to district, but they are comprised of community members, parent members, and school members operating what goes on in the school.
Yeah, thank you. It's very similar to my own view of site-based management. So I assume you're an enthusiast for that way of community involvement. Is that correct?
Well, actually, I thought that the site-based council movement on the East Coast was a lot more energy and many, many more hours than I as a parent had anticipated. I came to the schools as a partner with schools because I have children in the schools, not because I wanted to be an educator. I would say to you that in the last 5 years, once the National Parent Standards were published that followed Dr. Joyce Epstein's Johns Hopkins research, I am a much larger enthusiast of the parent standards than I am the incredible amount of hours that need to go in on site-based counsel.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Is there any other questions from the committee? One of the things that some of us laymen are interested in, Paula, is parental involvement. And some of the things that have happened in the state of Alaska of trying to define parental involvement. And one of the issues that was hotly debated, and I'm going to put you on the hot seat for just a moment, because it does affect us in our schooling a lot, and I'd kind of like to know how you as a policymaker would tackle that confidentiality that was spoken of earlier with regard to parental notification or parental choice with regard to student counseling. And I'm thinking specifically of abortion, where a parent would be out of the loop on the decision. How do you feel about that as a policymaker?
Well, I'm sorry I missed the discussion earlier. I'm not quite sure what you're referring to in that discussion since I wasn't part of that. Maybe you could fill me in just a little.
Well, the discussion was on whether the child should have confidentiality from the school.
From the parents.
But you spoke in terms of abortion. What else is in there?
Well, it goes, that's the issue that's important to me, but the issue is whether in some of the school-based counseling, whether the parents should be left out because of confidentiality.
Well, I don't want to come down too hard since I did miss the previous conversation, and so something must have been said in that I missed. I would say to you that I think this is probably a difficult thing to do over teleconference, but I would say to you that part of the reason I've been driven as a parent to be so closely involved with my own child's education as well as the climate of the school is because I was the child who came home littering people's front yard with bad papers, with D's and F's. I didn't bring those papers home. I also was the child that after receiving a poor parent-teacher conference, my parents would come home and I was beat. I think there are circumstances that kids live in today that the child also needs some sort of protection. The parent also needs information to do their job the best. But I think it also depends on age and stage and which subject we're talking about. My oldest daughter is 26. If all things go right in a family, which they are so easy to turn over, you have that ongoing conversation. If all things are right in a family, then you have developed a partnership with the school so that there's free-flowing communication. If those aren't the scenarios, then I'm not sure whose right it is to protect that child, but to me the child would come first, because I was that type of child. And it was my school and my counselors that put me together and put me back on the road. It was not my parents. So I appreciate and am a direct result of what schools were ready to offer safe havens for children. I'm not sure if that answers your question.
Well, I appreciate that, and that it's a pretty good testimonial, and I appreciate that, and that's kind of where I was headed. So thank you for that answer, and is there any other questions of the committee? Paul, I sure appreciate you taking the time to present yourself, and as always, you know, asking difficult questions. I appreciate the tact in which you handled it, and thank you for your time.
Thank you so much.
Now, we've got 15 minutes. We got a couple of the committee members that have other meetings. I have Vicki McCubbin on the line with us. And Vicki, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Thank you, Vicki. Vicki is in consideration for the TTC board. I'm sorry. I started there. Would you please go ahead and introduce yourself to us and let us know something of you and your desire to work within this board?
Thank you. My name is Vicki McCubbin. I grew up in Anchorage and am a product of the Anchorage School District. I've been working for the ASD for 20 years in various capacity. The last 17 has been as a classroom teacher in grades 1 through 8. I'm currently teaching 8th grade social studies, language arts, and sign language at middle school. I've been involved in the educational field through a variety of ways. I'm currently co-facilitating a methods class at APU for beginning teachers. I've also done a lot of committee work with NEA, AEA, and have co-chaired the Instructional Professional Development Committee for a couple of years, and I'm currently the chair of the Educational Excellence Committee, and have served on some other committees through AEA, and am currently on Cookeville Literacy Council as middle school coordinator. And I am very honored at the opportunity to be able to serve on the PTCP, and am very anxious to go about the work of the commission.
Thank you, and pardon me for mispronouncing your name, Vicki.
Okay, it happens all the time.
Well, I'm getting used to this, so is there questions from the committee that we might, Mr. Whitaker?
I have just a very quick one. I'm reading your resume, and I was fascinated by your thesis subject regarding multiple intelligences. Very quickly, what does that mean?
Students and all of us, adults and children as well, have the capacity to learn in a variety of different styles, and we tap into different portions of our brain. And some of us have a proclivity towards one particular part or the other. Some of us are very good at visual spatial tasks. School has traditionally tested for the cognitive tasks that involve reading, writing, logic, and math. But there are a number of students who also are very good at physical tasks, artistic talents, and other ways, and those can be a bridge to tap into those resources to help them to be able to handle some of the more traditionally school-oriented tasks. So I really want to pursue that as my thesis opportunity and try to use that with students in the classroom so they can learn the ways that they function best in the classroom and so that they can further their talents and achievements and be successful and productive in school.
Thank you. That was the right answer, and it is a fascinating subject. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Vicki. Is there any other questions from the committee? Just for information from the committee, how do you view the Teaching Practices Commission? What is it that you see that you want to bring as a mission to that committee?
I think that the commission needs to be a group of people looking objectively at situations where there might be some question as to the ethical conduct of people in the teaching profession, and I think it's very important that the objectivity stay there, and that the, in looking at how to handle difficulties and problems, that the interest of the welfare of students is put in the first and foremost.
Thank you very much. Okay. Thank you very much, Vicki, and Steve, and Paula, and Roy Nagyak, for joining us on teleconference. Unless there's somebody that I've missed, I'm going to, oh, well, there is. We have Co-Chair Dyson would like to ask a question.
No, that's all right.
Oh, okay.
I was just wondering, I'm sorry, did we miss, did we hear from Nelson Page?
I don't think then, or...
I called in.
Excuse me. Nelson Page, we contacted him late, so he... Bruce Johnson.
Okay, thank you very much.
I
appreciate
there,
that. Short notice was the name of the game on this one, and so I appreciate those who joined us on teleconference. And we're going to go ahead and go to testimony in the room then.
Yeah.
And without any further ado, thank you on teleconference. Are we going to stay on for those who want to hear the remainder?
It's up to you.
It's okay with me. I think that we ought to do that. And now, so I'm sorry. I don't have in front of me
Bruce Johnson's
name.
Agenda.
Oh, okay. Fair enough. There it is. Bruce, if you want to join us, come on up to the podium here and have a nice hot seat. We get to see your smiling face as we ask questions or comment, make comments. Bruce, why don't you go ahead and just introduce yourself and... I see you're going to be on a professional teaching practice commission as well. Just kind of give us an introduction to yourself and how you view that commission.
Thank you, Chairman Coghill and members of the HESS committee. I'm Bruce Johnson. I am currently the superintendent at Mount Edgecombe High School with a joint endeavor with the Department of Education as the director of the Division of Teaching and Learning Support. I've been doing the dual role since January. Prior to joining Mount Edgecombe 3 years ago, I joined the state in the early 80s here in Juneau and went on to become the superintendent here and then the superintendent in Kodiak Island. I spent 3 years in the villages of Kodiak kind of learning what life was like in rural Alaska, and it was a wonderful respite for me and my newborn daughter and my wife. So that's kind of the driving force behind doing that, as well as is just having that experience. As my resume indicates, I've been serving on the Professional Teaching Practices Commission for the past 3 years. I was the vice chair 2 years ago, and this past year have served as the chair of that committee. I believe that we perform a very important function in the state. I've been impressed at the quality of the people who belong to that commission and are appointed to that commission, regardless of their prior affiliation. It's been my sense and experience over the last 3 years that everybody comes to the table on that commission to make good decisions on behalf of young people, and I think we do play a critical role, and it's an important function. With that, I'll stop.
Thank you, Bruce. Is there questions? I know we're some of us are under time pressure here, so Mr. Dyson.
Thank you. I was intrigued by your dissertation. Trying to figure out in the language there, it seemed like your dissertation was on how elementary school principals thought they acted while they were trying to bring about change. Is that right?
Yes, that's essentially correct.
Did you conclude that they acted differently than they thought they acted?
No. What we concluded was that there were different behaviors on the part of elementary school principals that facilitated change. So we had a study group and a control group, and the study group that we looked at closely that had brought about significant change really behaved in kind of different ways.
I may continue.
Yes, Mr. Dyson.
Did you just say that people who were successful at change acted different, had different behaviors than those who were less successful?
That's correct.
And if I may continue, and did those who made changes purpose or were able to affect change in the school purposely change their behavior, or was it just the way they were wired?
It was probably a combination of those two. Some of it we concluded was learned behavior. Others were kind of natural talent and flair that individuals brought to their leadership role.
What's the Danforth Policymakers Institute?
That was the state was invited to participate, and one of your members here on the Hess Committee also represented the legislature on that effort. And what we were looking at essentially was how can we bring about improvements in our state on behalf of young people by joining forces. And so we had various state agencies working together in a summer institute, which was sponsored by the Danforth Foundation.
I bet the legislature was well represented, weren't they?
They were. He played a very active role.
Thank you.
Bruce, thank you. Is there any other questions? Yes, Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Bruce, looking over your very impressive dossier here, I noticed that in 91, you had been serving for 5 years as the superintendent of schools in Juneau. And then in 91, you went, as the village area principal at Kodiak. Would you mind sharing with us why you went from a superintendency to a principal? Especially from a place like
Juneau. Yeah, a place like Juneau, and now I want to come back, right? I did that foremost because I felt I needed a change in my life, and it coincided with the birth of my only child. And one of the things that I was unable to do in the first 9 months of her life was balance being a father and the superintendent in the Juneau School District. I had chosen to do the Juneau superintendency in a very active kind of way where I attended everything. I was never home, and I decided I'd been critical enough of fathers who were not attending to the needs of their children that I was going to try not to be one of those. And so I decided that I needed to be a building principal, and You can imagine that the thought of a superintendent from Juneau joining your district as a principal didn't appeal to every superintendent in this state. And I found John Wittevine on Kodiak Island that was willing to give me a try, but he put me out in a village, remote village, so I wasn't much of a threat. But it worked very well for me, and it really gave me the time that I desired with my family, plus it really broadened my perspective on education in Alaska and kind of filled a gap that I didn't know much about. You know, I could only theorize about what went on in rural Alaska, and I learned that firsthand.
One brief follow-up. Yes, sir. I was fortunate enough 3 or 4 years ago to meet a constituent of mine who was at Mount Edgecombe, and through a strange quirk of things, but I met several of his peers as well, and I was super impressed with these kids. What is it that you do at Mount Edgecombe that is different than so many other schools, or am I just easily impressed?
Well, I don't know you well enough to know whether you're easily impressed. I can say that young people who come to Mount Edgecombe and find the capacity and the wherewithal to hang in there for 3 or 4 years and graduate from there, I think are forever altered by that experience. They gain an independence and a self-discipline and a self-reliance that I don't think comes as easily when you're looked after in your home community within your home family. They're forced to do that because in many cases they're several hundred miles away from home. Mount Edgecombe is a wonderful place for a select group of young people in this state. And I hope that it always continues. It offers a unique education that I believe is extremely beneficial for this state today and in the future. You know that many leaders have come from there, and I believe that leaders that are going to be that have graduated in recent times and will graduate in the future will ultimately play significant roles in our state.
Thank you,
Bruce.
Thank you very much. Thank you. If there's no other questions, thank you, Bruce. What I'd like to do then is include the introduction on the on these particular appointments, and thank those that took the time to come out for that. I greatly appreciate that. Next order of business we have some of our committee leaving, but I do have a handout before we all leave, so what I'd like to do is take this and pass it down. Did you get one of these?
Yeah. Were you going to go back and talk?
Yes, we are.
Okay.
We're going to take a few moments. But do you want to do this now while we have all the committee members here?
I'm going to have to leave in a couple of minutes. I had a question of remedial costs.
Okay, well, we can take care of his project later, can't we?
Yeah, it's pretty straightforward.
Well, then let's, with that request from Representative Green, if not finding no objection, why don't you go ahead and who would you like?
Well, I'm not sure which of the prior testifiers.
Okay, throw the question out, we'll see if somebody stands up, we'll have them come up and identify themselves.
Wendy or someone, but I was wondering about the comparative cost between a remedial English or a remedial class. It doesn't have to be English. At UA as opposed to at staying by or taking a class in high school, a remedial, that whatever that shortfall might have been in a high school setting, and then throwing a wrinkle in it that would there be any merit instead of burdening the university system, which I would presume is going to be more expensive because of the, with something like the bar refresher course that lawyers take where they cram through a refresher thing that would help maybe bring these students around in whatever class they were deficient in. And I don't know which one to throw that out at.
Well, looks like Wendy Redmond's going to step up to the
Thanks, Wendy.
I appreciate that.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Green, it kind of depends. I hate to give an answer that is that confusing, but one of the confusing things in this legislation is we offer, there are two different kinds of sort of pre-college education. One is developmental and one is remedial. Developmental is for students who simply score too low. They simply do not have the skills to be able to do college-level work. Remedial is a term that we use for people like you or I who decided to go back to college today, and it's been a really long time since we've taken algebra, and we just need a kind of a brush-up course. But we actually had it at one time, and we need to take a brush-up. And so there's sort of different level courses, and they're offered at different. The pre-college courses are at this are below 100 level. Students get no credit. They can't use the student loan for it. We have many students who have to take several of those courses before they can begin. The remedial are taught at the 100 level. They don't get credit towards their degree, but they do get credit for it. This pre-college courses, we usually teach those with using adjunct faculty, so I'd say that the cost on those is probably a little higher, but maybe about comparable with what you'd get in the high school. The remedial courses are going to be more expensive. They're going to be taught with university faculty who are, you know, generally the cost per student you'd find would be higher than it would be at the college.
And then finally, if I might, Mr. Chairman,
Green.
Is there any merit to a different category of instruction for this person that wants to go to college but was somewhat deficient, rather than either burdening the university system or the school from whence they came with this fairly high cost? Is there any other avenue, volunteer type or anything like that, that would elevate the student?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Green, I think that there are several states that have looked at various ways to try to do this, to solve the problem, and I hopefully that's one of the things that Representative Dyson is really trying to bring to the table, to sort of lay this out and say, what do we do about this, because it is a dilemma. It's very difficult to say to, in some states, the high school assumes that responsibility. If a student doesn't meet those requirements, they can come back to the school, and in some of these states that are putting in the warranties, so to speak. It's very difficult for students to, once they leave the high school, to have to come back to the high school for classes. That's very difficult to do psychologically. In this state, the schools are, in law, authorized to offer a 13th year. They don't do that in Alaska, but it is on the books. So it is conceivable that the schools could, with proper funding, in fact, offer a 13th year, which would be a bridge for between high school and college that may pick up some of those courses. And that's another option that might exist.
Thank you. Interesting concept.
Representative Dyson.
Yeah, thank you. Wendy, what's the decision process that you all went through when you to come to the conclusion to oppose this bill?
Mr. Chairman, I think Representative Dyson, it really has to do with taking money from one agency to the other. We really don't believe that that's in the university's best interest. Our Board of Regents have been very much involved and very supportive of the AQEI process that the schools are going through right now. We believe that the schools should be fully funded, and they're not being fully funded at this point. So. Our participation in any way to decrease their funding to increase ours doesn't really make sense to us.
I might probably need some remedial education if I may continue.
Yes.
I'll ask the question differently.
Okay.
Did you flip a coin, use a Ouija board, vote, have a deliberative discussion, debate? What's the process you went through to come to this conclusion to oppose the bill?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Dyson, there was no formal action. It was the Board of Regents work with me, and I with them. There's a high level of trust. We set out an agenda for what are our priorities in a year, and what I touch base with them on other issues relative to sort of those priorities and those strategies. So there was not a formal action taken by the Board of Regents opposing or objecting to the legislation. It was based on what I know is are the priorities for the university this year, and my personal discussion with the board members.
Thank you.
Is that answered?
No, eloquently. Thank you.
Is there any other question?
All right. Thank you, Wendy. I appreciate you. Was there any other questions on HB 118 that needed to come forward? Oh. Representative Dyson.
Yeah, I think there's quite a bit more discussion that's going to go on this, and I would suggest we adjourn without taking further action on it, and we'll pick it up in the future. I would like for us as a committee to take action on this, but maybe maybe it's too quick, but maybe the two members of the subcommittee that are here could tell us what they've done and why we should take action.
Well, just for the record, we're talking about the
long-term care task force.
Yeah, let's see, the subcommittee recommendation on a long-term care task force report. So that's on the record. And just to make sure that everything's nice clean for the record, we're going to go ahead and hold off action on HB 118 for a later date. And at this point, we'll just finish up the committee meeting with the short report on this long-term task force report. And Joe Green actually gave this in, and this was from Representative Bryce. Is that true?
Ann Kemplin.
Okay, yes.
My take on the short and dirty, Mr. Chair, this is Representative Bryce, is that what had happened is we met as a subcommittee. We reviewed with the various departments the four pieces of legislation. And then as a subcommittee, we took the action to forward to the full committee these four pieces of legislation to hopefully request the committee's chairman to introduce these bills under the Hess flag, is my understanding, and then move from there. Then to implement for the four recommendations for legislation that the long-term care task force made.
Yes, Representative Dyson.
Yep. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Bryce, did you and the subcommittee make any changes in those four recommendations that came from a task force?
Representative Kemplin.
Representative Kemplin, there was some discussion of some changes.
Plenty of changes,
and
yeah.
I wasn't sure exactly how those changes were to be accomplished, whether they were to be done at the committee level. My understanding was that there'd be an opportunity at the committee level to introduce amendments to these pieces of legislation.
Representative Bryce?
And to echo that, I believe that there was quite a bit of discussion on a number of these bills that our recommendation wasn't necessarily, in my mind, to support the four pieces of legislation as were necessarily.
Hold that thought. We've got to take